Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com.
Or you can also... We're podcasting around the world. You can check out our podcasts, and people are checking out our podcasts, indeed, all around the world. Thank you so much for listening.
All around the world.
We're here to offer you a restaurateur's perspective, or two restaurateurs' perspectives, on not just running a restaurant or going to a restaurant, but food, where it comes from, how we do business, where you go out to eat, maybe some behind-the-scenes stuff, and how to save the planet.
And some of the ridiculousness that happens to us on any given day.
And one of the things that's really ridiculous is going into the restaurant business. If you have any aspirations to go into the restaurant business, first of all...
Call me. I'll talk you out of it. It's no problem.
Mark and I also have a thriving consulting business, which right now we're building our own, another restaurant of our own, so we're not taking clients at the moment.
Except most of our customers call us and we say, don't do it. And they say, okay, I won't do it.
To be honest with you, it's $125 an hour. And you can get away for $250 with Mark and I sitting in that first hour. Just most of the people who come to us, we ask them to bring us a business plan, or we'll sometimes consult for existing restaurants. But when people come to us and they're talking about starting a restaurant, we discourage them from doing so. Because unless you really love it, and if you're smart enough to do it and get it done and make a little bit of money on it, you're probably smart enough to make a lot of money doing something else.
That's a fact.
But if you need to be in the restaurant business, you need to be aware of some facts, and you also need to be very, very handy. There's a lot of adrenaline rush in the restaurant business, and there's a lot of a need to be a jack of all trades. And that's partially because
people
you might
call you that. No, something because, else. Never mind.
Because part of the reason you need to be a jack of all trades is because those skills come in handy while you have your restaurant. And if you're one of the 70% of restaurants that go out within the first 5 years, when you get that other job, you're going to have to get.
You could be a plumber. You could be an electrician.
You could do it. I will tell you that I was never Mr. Handyman before, but I know more about electrical systems, heating, ventilation, and air conditioning systems.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 20-amp fuse. Yeah, that needs 20-amp fuse. Of course it does. What am I, an idiot? Of course it needs 20-amp fuse.
But these things we didn't know anything about when we started a restaurant.
I still don't know enough about them.
That's because that's my area of the partnership.
Thank goodness.
Right down to the problem with the sewage ejector pump last August.
That was totally your job, too.
It's not the electrical problems with that was the problem. It was all the other stuff that was really hard to deal with. But one of the things that's interesting about the restaurant business is restaurant equipment must be very built very durably. Mm-hmm. And there are certain pieces of restaurant equipment, because restaurants just – it's unbelievable. You think if you had your household carpet, if you put it in a restaurant, in a month, it's over.
Right.
The door to the – your front door, if your front door was the front door of a restaurant, it would fall off the hinges in a year.
Right. Imagine if your front door opened – 400 times a day.
Yeah, I mean, more than that. I mean, it's amazing to me the abuse that a restaurant goes through, and people know this. And actually, there are moves before the state legislature, before the Congress, to change the depreciation of a restaurant building because it gets battered so quickly. You should be able to write it down more. You know, they say the useful life of a building is 30 years. No restaurant's going to last 30 years.
Right, or a carpet is 20 years.
Well, one of the interesting things that happens as a result of the durability of restaurant equipment, the demand for it, and the restaurants changing hands. Almost 70%, this in New York, for example, 70% of New York's 23,000 food establishments either close or change hands within the first 5 years, and this leads to a very active auction market for secondhand
equipment.
And again,
realize that New York is a thriving market compared to some other markets in
exactly.
The country.
So going to restaurant auctions in Manhattan, let me tell you, Mark and I built our first restaurant entirely on stuff from auction.
Maybe the craziest world
very
underworld, maybe we should call it, in, that there exists.
And these restaurant auctions are open to the public. So if you want to go and try your hand at one of these things, you're more than welcome to go. You know, in the Bowery in New York, they have all the secondhand stores for where you can pick up, and all the restaurant equipment stores. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those guys will go to these auctions. But let me tell you something. If you want a peek into a world where you don't know what's going on,
right?
There are a lot of shady characters at restaurant auctions.
Shady?
Oh, my goodness.
You have, like, oak trees of shade in those places.
Well, let me give you an example as to why some people go, though. For instance, this is from an article in the New York Times from back in March. For instance, at an auction at the China Buffet in Midtown, a walk-in freezer said to retail for $50,000 sold for $2,500, and a wall-sized framed photograph of Hong Kong for $60. A six-burner stove with a salamander for broiling, a deep-fat fryer, pots, seltzer system, and a two-door deli case were all bought for under $1,000. These are things that new go for thousands and thousands and
tens of thousands of dollars.
And so to get these things used is really, we would have been unable to open our first restaurant with the money.
When we originally opened Stage Left, everything was used. The chairs, the tables, the garbage cans. But anything we could get away with, the teapots, you name it, they're all used.
And this is a great strategy to use if you're trying to open a restaurant or operate an endeavor on a limited budget. But you really need to know a little bit about equipment. I do remember the one walk-in that we bought. We thought we got a great deal on it, except that it had no machine parts.
The reach-in. It was a refrigeration.
There was nothing inside.
It was a refrigeration unit, and you open the doors, and a lot of most of the places the auctions don't have electricity,
right?
So you can't plug anything in. You buy everything as is, and what you realize very, very quickly is about 20% of what you buy you need to throw away.
Mm-hmm.
So just factor that 20% factor in, because every once in a while you're going to buy a refrigeration unit and you're going to unscrew the back. And there's going to be no compressor in it,
which is exactly what happened.
A true story happened to Francis and me.
Well, and the other thing is, when you go to these things, they're really very interesting. And if you want, from a cultural anthropology perspective, to go out and see what goes on in the darker side, I feel like it's like walking the docks in 1950. You know, it's the bidders are typical. This is from the Times article again. The bidders were typical of the auction circuit: men in jeans, wool caps, large wads of cash, because it's all cash, everybody.
Yep.
Macho attitudes. English, Spanish, Hebrew, and Arabs. All rumblings commingled. Now, you have a lot of different people and a lot of different cultures, and you have a lot of people who know how to work this market. It's a cash market. It's a lot of people with a lot of money in your pocket, because when you bid, you're paying, okay?
Right.
And you're paying cash then. And if you're not, you've got some problems.
You have big problems. A lot of these guys who they work these auctions, okay? There are guys who go from auction to auction, and they work the auction. And they're
meaning?
When I say they're working the auction, A, they're looking for things that go undervalued that they can buy and sell either at their their retail
shops.
And
B, they're looking to rip you off.
And B, they're looking to work over the people.
They're looking for Holden Caulfield bidding out
there. They're looking for somebody, some unsuspecting person bidding. And now they, A, may be in cahoots with the auctioneer to bid up items that you want.
Mm-hmm.
Or B, they may just be the bad guys.
And I have to say, we had an auction at the restaurant that we're currently building. We auctioned the stuff off that was in there before we started building it. And we held an auction there, and there was a guy literally in a dark guy with 2 days' growth in a beard growth in a trench coat. Literally in a trench coat. And he literally would say, psst, come here.
Hey, come here. Let me talk to you.
That's what it was. It was, I got to talk to you.
I got to talk to you.
Like, get away from me. Get away from me.
So I'll tell you what. And he literally says to me, I'll tell you what. You want the walk-in boxes? I'll lay off the walk-in boxes.
Meaning he won't bid on them, so the price will stay artificially low. Which is collusion and a crime.
Which would be a crime. I'm like, no. You bid on what you want. I'll bid on what I want. Don't worry about it. After the auction's over, he comes up to me. He goes, hey, I figure you owe me something because I laid off those walk-in boxes. Like, I don't owe you nothing. He's like, no, you owe me something. We're going to settle this one way or another.
Oh, yeah. Of course, Mark is 330 pounds and a big guy.
Okay, how do you want to settle it? We should settle it now, though.
What's your way?
Well, anyway, an ugly, ugly underworld. These are the guys.
Let's talk about nicer things.
Okay, I agree.
You're
Let's
listening
do that.
To the restaurant, guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Welcome back. You're listening to the restaurant, guys.
Francis and I were talking a little bit about the opening days of opening our place and
our first place.
Some of the trials and tribulations of being young restaurant owners, and you know, being forced to be on a budget, and sometimes being at a budget meant going to restaurant auctions.
Sometimes we did. We went to every restaurant auction.
We bought everything for the opening of Stage Left, and we recently had a restaurant auction upstairs. And I was talking about these guys,
these phantoms of the night,
hoodlums, okay, as my mother would say.
Because you're thinking, how many people in this room are packing? And you know it's a couple.
But these guys who come to these auctions and they prey on unsuspecting people. And either they prey on you, and the story I told was, guy came to me before an auction said and tried to collude with me to keep the price artificially down.
And you said no.
Right. I said no. Not, he didn't know that it was the restaurant upstairs from my restaurant.
Right.
So, but, I was unwilling to collude with him, yet he wanted a payoff for staying away from items that he knew that I was interested in.
And a less small and a less large man than Mark might have faced some.
A less intimidated man than I. And it was really, and what he said, and finally at the end, the auctioneer said, hey, these guys own a restaurant downstairs. They're building a new restaurant up here. What, leave them alone.
And he's like, okay, these times.
And that's what he says. He's like, oh, I didn't know this was your thing.
Oh, that's right.
I'm sorry.
I didn't know this was your thing.
No problem. I got no problem with you. We're fine.
That's
we're
your
good.
Thing. T-I-N-G. Thing.
We're good. Unbelievable.
My favorite, though, is when...
But these guys are this is the stuff on the bottom of the ocean that the shrimp won't eat. Okay?
They're the small-time mobsters that are so small you get sent to a restaurant auction in Jersey.
Where do you got to be on the ladder? To get somebody for $100
Here's the deal. Stop making fun of the mob, or our radio station's going to blow up.
These guys aren't mobsters; they're below the mob.
Right. Well, you know, when we did, and again, this is a very interesting thing. These are open to the public. They're advertised in the paper. They're advertised in the New York Times around here, and whatever city you're in, they're advertised in the back. They're very interesting places to go and see a million different cultures come together.
Yep.
But you need to be very wary about buying things at these auctions. Mm. And the other thing is, take a look at what goes on at these auctions, because I remember when I first learned about this, and again, we bought an entire restaurant at auction the first time around, but we learned some painful mistakes along the way. And one of the painful mistakes, if you want to go, what we learned is that our partner Lou would go and stand and watch while I would bid. And the reason that we did that was because he sort of wandered away as I was bidding on something, and I would bid, and then the price would go away. They'd say, okay, it's $10 to you, $10, and this is a piece. So this was, you know, hundreds of dollars. So $10 right. to you, the bid is $11, $11, $12 to you, the bid is $12 to $13, $14 to you. And Luke came up to me, and he whispered in my ear, he said, you're bidding against a fire extinguisher. Because I didn't know where the auctioneer was pointing.
But these auctioneers
and he was just
are
running
great.
Me up.
These auctioneers are great. They literally can see in your eye if there's a piece of equipment that you want, that you're interested in. And instead of letting it go for $100, they know you're willing to go to $500 or $550, and they read your body language, and what they do is they will bid you up. Remember, the auctioneer takes a cut, takes an actual percentage of everything that's sold. So the higher prices things go, the more money they make. So they literally, and it happens at every single auction. I've never seen an auction where it didn't happen, where somebody doesn't bid against a fire hydrant or a phantom person, a hole in the rug.
And so that's why you go with somebody to watch your back. And so I don't encourage you to engage in these things lightly, because you really need to know the lay of the land. But they are also very, very interesting. It is a lot like watching an episode of The Sopranos, because
it really is.
Around New York, anyway, they're very, very colorful. And the guy will say, this is a piece of equipment. It's a beautiful piece of equipment. And like two of the guy's friends who are like seated in the among the bidders will go, oh my God, so beautiful. Look at it.
It's like
a piece of garbage.
And when somebody bids, they'll say something like somebody will bid and somebody else will go, oh, he's a dealer. He's a dealer. He knows a good deal when he sees them.
Oh my.
It's great. But the other thing that you have to be careful of at these auctions is you're bidding by the piece.
Right.
Okay. So if you're bidding on a pile of 400 forks, okay, and you're bidding a dime, 25 cents, 50 cents, a dollar, okay, you're bidding a dollar a fork.
Yeah.
If there are 400 forks, you're bidding $400. Yeah. You're not bidding $1. So, again, there's so many trials and so many tribulations at these things. They are very dangerous places to go if you really need to purchase things. But at the same time, Francis and I funded our first restaurant probably for one third, I would say, by the time with all the mistakes.
Yep.
And the things we threw away, probably a third of what we could have possibly opened. And we could not have opened our restaurant without restaurant auctions. We just simply didn't have the money.
And I think it's a very interesting cultural experience to go and look at this thing, because it is almost like it's a cash world. It's a world mm-hmm. gone by. And it really does feel like a throwback. And I think it's interesting to just go and see these things happen. And if you are looking to open a restaurant, if you can manage this thing, what I suggest you do is to go to a couple of these auctions and see the lay of the
right,
land.
And don't bid.
And see how they work. And there are you know, sometimes it's the least likely place that you'll find great mm-hmm. stuff. There was a bar that I used to go to called the Cadillac Bar, and the MO used to be you're never too far from the Cadillac Bar. When they went out of business, we bought all their garbage cans, all their Metro racks, and right. all their tables. And so we really never were too far from the Cadillac Bar. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott, just talking about restaurant auctions and what fun and peril they can be.
Well, you know, you got to live life on the edge a little bit. You know, one of the interesting things about restaurant auctions that I was unaware of, and I spoke with an auctioneer recently who's an interesting character, and he told me that they never advertise the Chinese restaurants
mm-hmm. as being Chinese restaurants.
As being auctions. When a Chinese restaurant goes out, they never advertise it as a Chinese restaurant, because the equipment is somewhat specialized, and people may think, oh, well, a bunch of woks and stuff, I don't need that, and so they may be less likely to come. And so, again, they sort of mislead you to get you to come.
Right.
So they never advertise that for – and I said, well, wouldn't Chinese people come when people who want to open a Chinese restaurant come? And he said, no, they don't come because in culturally, many Chinese believe that they would never buy used equipment because it has bad spirits, because it has the spirits of the other restaurant
of the
that
failed restaurant.
And I thought that was really, really fascinating. And we had an auction of a Chinese restaurant, of mm-hmm. all the interior of a Chinese restaurant, some really durable equipment.
Right.
And no one bid on it. There were no Chinese mm-hmm. bidders there. There were no bidders there looking to open a Chinese restaurant.
What's funny is what I found even more peculiar than that, and, you know, it's cultural. I actually, we had a bunch of stuff left over from the auction, brought them to a friend who owns a Chinese restaurant, and they refused. So wouldn't take them.
Because same thing?
And they were brand new items. There were items that were still
in the box.
Unused.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I didn't want to bring somebody junk, so I brought them some unused teacups and plates and things that had never been opened, and they didn't want them because they were afraid that they were
I think that's a really fascinating cultural mm-hmm. difference. And one of the interesting things is when you go to these auctions, it's sort of like going to a pork store or to a meat market or to the fish market, where you see, again, over food, everybody's got to eat, you know, and we bring our culture to the table in restaurants. And again, at the fish market, that's one of the most interesting things of being up at 2 o'clock in the morning, sloshing around in the fish market in New York is.
Yeah, you haven't lived to be carried a 70-pound halibut to your truck.
But to look at all the different cultures and that they look for different things mm-hmm. and different kinds of fish and different characteristics in the fish that we buy. And I think that you find that at restaurant auctions as well. But again, beware. It's very, if you, as long as you don't bid on anything, you're fine. But wear some jeans and work boots. Try and look kind of mean. Snarl a little bit and go to your local restaurant auction. And it's a fun experience. And, you know, there are certain things, like if you buy a mixer from a restaurant that's in good working order, that thing will last you forever.
Forever.
Forever
a Hobart
and ever.
Mixer, a 20-quart Hobart. Cost you $10,000 new. Sometimes you can buy them at auction for $1,000.
Or $500 even. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey, 1450. WCTC with The Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, here with my partner, Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or just through restaurantguysradio.com. Hey, Francis.
Hey there, Mark.
I maybe we've talked enough about restaurant auctions. Let's talk about some of the Well, the occurrences in restaurants after they're built.
One of the things that we have experienced in we experienced our own restaurant auction, and as we took over a restaurant that went out of business, and we auctioned everything inside there off. And we have also spent a lot of time.
Horrible experience.
It's true. Yeah. Funny though. But we also spend a lot of time looking at other Italian restaurants as we have prepared to open our own. We've done some consulting for Italian restaurants, we looked at them pretty in depth. As we seek to open our own Catherine Lombardi, which will be open in downtown New Brunswick in the fall of 2005, which we are now in. And I have to say, Mark, Jersey Italian restaurants, I know it's your culture more than mine, very amusing
they
stories.
They are definitely, there are anecdotes waiting to happen.
First anecdote that I found in a lot of these Italian restaurants.
Yes, sir.
Old school means old steel. Well, a lot of the old ways that they used to run a restaurant was back in the time when the restaurants took a lot of cash in, I think the way that owners looked upon it was, well, as long as the waiters don't steal too much, I don't want to keep too good records because I'm not reporting everything anyway.
One of the things that you realize when you own a restaurant is, if I'm stealing from the government, chances are I've left a door open for somebody to steal from me.
And what am I going to do? Say, hey, you stole the money I stole. Call a cop, right?
Yes.
But the problem now is with restaurants, and we find this all the time in consulting, we didn't grow up in that era. Our restaurant, you know, we're 40 years old. We've had our restaurant for 13 years. And this affected the high-end restaurants first, but it affects all restaurants now. Most people pay in credit cards. There's just not cash in restaurants. And so, and not that we would, you know, suggest that philosophy anyway, but it's just not tenable now because it doesn't work. So what happens is the charges are coming through on the credit cards, and the owners of the restaurant aren't seeing the profit because they're still following that whole, well, we don't want to keep track too closely of what's going on, but the government's certainly keeping track of you very closely because they know how much gets charged in your establishment. So what happens is...
So for 10% cash, you're taking all this risk that people can steal from you. It's just crazy.
It's crazy. So
it's absolutely crazy.
So the way that restaurateurs combat this now is we have computers and we spend a lot of money to make sure that everything that's supposed to get charged for gets charged for. And if something's walking out the back door, you want to know about it in a week, not in a month. You know what I'm saying?
The faster,
so,
the better.
So, and a lot of these old school restaurants, are they walking with paper dupes and the like? Stop this.
These classical Italian restaurants, I'll call them classical.
Yeah.
Italian restaurants that have cropped up all across this state. But especially in the tri-state area. They're across the country, but especially in the
home
tri-state
area. Home of the Sopranos, baby.
It's just, everybody has this fake kind of Goomba style that is just ridiculous.
And you're listening to that from the mouth of an actual Goomba. That's how you know. Me, Shanty Irish Francis, and my friend Mark the Goomba.
Let me tell you something. Plastic plants?
Yeah, Goomba.
They have no place anywhere in a restaurant.
I was in your grandmother's house. Everything was covered in plastic, Mark.
Yes, yes.
The chairs, the furniture, everything.
Except for things that grow. Okay, things that grow were never plastic.
The upholstery did not escape, but the plants did escape.
That was a big day in grandma's house.
When you took the plastic off?
When we took the plastic off all the furniture. Yeah. It was really... And then she bought a new chair.
Yeah.
And she didn't buy the plastic covering.
Whoa.
For it. It was huge. It was huge. Grandma was like, nobody eat on the chair.
You know what my favorite thing is? And by the way, this is Catherine Lombardi, who the restaurant is named after. And don't worry, the restaurant, I fought Mark a long time. There will be no plastic coatings on the chairs.
Well, you got to realize that in my culture, in my household, we were just eating all the time.
Yeah.
So the house was full of 40 people.
Always
so
eating.
People were sitting on the couches eating tomato sauce. Constantly.
You
had to have plastic seat covers or you'd have to replace the furniture every month.
My favorite it's kind of Goomba thing that the culture that these restaurants try and put out there is there are a couple of restaurants, sort of high-end Italian restaurants I know, where the waiters are Mexican guys and the captains, the maitre d's, are, you know, Hispanic guys.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, their first language is Spanish. They speak English with a Spanish accent and Italian not at all.
Yeah.
Yet they try really hard to speak English with an Italian accent. And whenever we got our third partner...
And they say things to you like, grazie.
But with it, like with a Spanish accent.
Neither one of us speaks that language. What are you doing?
they'll say the specials to you, and they'll try and fake an Italian accent while talking about the portobello mushroom, signor. And it's terrible. And what's funny, we go out with our third partner, the third partner on stage left is a gentleman who's Cuban, and his parents were Galician, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so we speak Spanish, and sometimes we'll just start talking to him in Spanish.
It's better.
It's too painful. It's better.
At least you speak. Okay, here's the waiter trying to speak to me in a language that he doesn't speak and I don't speak.
It's crazy.
It doesn't make any sense at all.
I will remember the time there was a Southwest restaurant in New Brunswick called Zia Grill.
Oh yeah, what a
joke, right?
Just a poorly conceived
restaurant. So the Southwest fad in dining lasted about 7 minutes,
this place was opened by guys who owned Italian restaurants.
Exactly. But the Southwest fad was at its height when Arizona 206 was a famous restaurant in New York.
And a great place. I loved it.
And a great place. Our friend John Fisher was the maitre d' there. He's now an instructor at Culinary Institute of America, Greystone. He's been on the show. And it was really great. They had amazing tequilas, and the chef there was really great. David Walzog? Waltuck?
That was David Walzog.
Walzog. Waltuck's at Chanterelle.
Yes.
Anyway, so that fad was rose and set with that restaurant. After that restaurant has already gone down, we opened Zia Grill in New Brunswick.
We didn't open it.
These guys did. Fad over, okay? You're a day late and a dollar short. So you walk into this place with the fake cactuses and the fake, desert things and, I don't know, fake tumbleweed rolling through the dining
room. And the red acrylic bar top.
And they took this beautiful, the second oldest bar in New Brunswick, and acrylicked over the bar top.
It was like a 120-year-old bar. Red acrylic on top of the wood.
So I don't know if I ever told you this, Mark. I went to dinner there, and the guys who owned it had owned La Cucina in Somerville.
Sure.
And the owner's a very nice guy, and they all
actually ran a very good Italian restaurant.
Very good Italian restaurant. The guy came over to the table, and he knew I was. And he sat me. I was with my girlfriend at the time, who's also in the food business, in the wine business specifically, and is very talented, and brought us over to a table and sat us down. Now, this guy is an Italian-American guy, and he's got on a string tie, a white shirt, and those chef pants that have, like, the different peppers and cilantro on, and shiny black shoes. And then he sits me down next to a fake...
Did the shoes have little tassels on them?
I don't remember, but they may have.
I'm sure they
did. And
he
sat me down next to a fake cactus, right?
Uh-huh.
And, again, he's an Italian guy who, had worked in Italian restaurants his whole life, and I guess old habits die hard. And he sat us down. He pulled a chair for Tracy. And he said, so would you like bottled water this evening? And I said, yeah, we'll have a bottle of water. And she said, I'll have sparkling. And he said, grazie, signorina. So he walks, didn't even realize what he did. Walks away from the table and she says, what is this, a spaghetti western? Oh, my. And then I had another experience just recently. I was up in Jersey City in an Italian restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And the old school Italian waiters, these guys are really from Italy. They really speak Italian. But they also speak Spanish because most of the bussers and other staff on the floor are Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy comes over to my table. I had jury duty. So I went to jury duty. I went to this place for lunch.
Okay.
And the guy comes over and says, oh, senor, nice to see you. What can I bring you for lunch? Very polite, very nice. And he turns to the busboy, who was Mexican, and in Spanish says some of the most obscene cursing. Because I'm Irish-American, right? Nobody thinks I can speak Spanish, so it's like a secret weapon I have. And he said some of the things involving the anatomy of this man's mother that were just completely... but he just assumed I'm Irish. I couldn't understand it.
People try and speak a different language. I mean, it's happened to me in other countries sometimes where, people look at me, don't realize that I speak French and start, saying things that they shouldn't say.
So,
and you pick up on it.
It's funny. It's great. But see, me, they think, white bread, Irish boy, certainly doesn't know Spanish. And I have to let him go through the whole meal. And the whole meal, he is busting this guy and hammering on this guy. And finally, on the way out, I said... gracias para todo. Hasta luego. Hasta luego. See you next time.
Yeah.
Very funny. He was mortified. Left him a big tip. It was very entertaining.
Sheet of white. Scared.
Very entertaining lunch I had.
Maitre d'.
Anyway, you're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. You're back. Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott, owners of Stage Left Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey, soon to own Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And actually, I should put this out as a shameless plug. We are going to be bringing on some sommeliers, a sous chef, and some captains. So if you've ever considered a job in the restaurant industry, you might want to give us an email at francis@restaurantguysradio.com.
You are shameless.
I am, totally. But the reason I bring that up is because in an effort to do research on Catherine Lombardi, this Italian-American restaurant that we are opening that's going to be fabulous.
We went to a lot of Italian-American restaurants across
the
state.
Well, we had a lot of funny experiences, let me tell you.
And a lot of what people call that Northern Italian, which...
Yeah, Northern Italian. Bayonne, New Jersey, Northern Italian. I got you Northern Italian right here.
We'll call it North Jersey Italian.
Okay, your idea of cuisine or of, like, the service, the rules of service, should not come from The Sopranos or, like, the Godfather movies. You know
and
what I mean?
And you shouldn't make up names for food like veal Veronese all'Italia.
I've been to Verona in Italia, and they don't make veal like that. Or, like... Della Nonna Piancone.
Yeah.
Who is the Grandma Piancone? Oh, I don't know. We just made that up.
we were looking for an Italian name. We put one.
And there's a lot of really mediocre stuff out there, but I'm amused at what I call, I mean, there's fancy dining. And then there's what we call fancy schmancy dining, you know, which is just, it's made up stuff.
Yeah, where your waiter puts your napkin in your your lap.
Get your hands out of my lap.
Yeah, worse, get your hands out of my wife's lap. Okay?
Exactly.
Because now I'm mad. Now I'm not just you're not just making me feel ookie, you're making me mad.
So the other fancy schmancy thing is like the whole like when they present the plates, like it's a big like the waiter's like, and now the food. It's like when you go to a wedding and they announce the bridal party and stuff, and they announce the staff. Do you ever go to one of those weddings?
Yes.
I don't know if you're from outside New Jersey.
Now our beautiful maitre d'. 6'6", 220 pounds, out of the University of Oklahoma.
Mark.
Our beautiful maitre d'.
Mark is exaggerating, but only a little. If you're not from New Jersey, you may not realize the schlocky weddings that we can do here in the city. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the staff. And the waiters will walk in, and now the mother of the groom.
And they'll run in through, like, one of those little steam things, like it's a big football game.
Well, they'll come in often in a line, and often the women will be on one side of the men, and they'll cross carrying their trays, and you're like... Are you kidding me? All right, some of the other fancy schmancy parts of service are the big. Now, where did this come from? The big multicolored rock candy sugar tray with the chocolate covered espresso beans.
I don't know. I never need to eat purple sugar,
sir.
Never ever.
Your rock candy swizzle stick with your espresso. No, I'll just have my espresso. Thank you very much.
Maybe some sugar even.
Here's another favorite of mine. I went to a restaurant in New Brunswick, which shall remain nameless, years ago, when it was owned by a different person, and it was before cell phones were as popular as they are.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat down to dinner, and a friend of mine got a call, and what the maitre d' did rather than come over and say, sir, you have a call on the house phone.
Mm-hmm.
He came over and said, sir, you have a call on the house phone. And he handed him a cordless phone sitting at the table.
At the table.
And my friend went, I'll take it. He said, no, here, please. And he said, no. There was a little, like, no, you have
right,
to stay here
and
take
right.
it. Anyway, so he finally did not want to, you know, be Mr. Mobster and, you know, Mr. Important Guy and take the call at the table. He got up and he went and took the call near the restroom or wherever. Do you know that we got the bill?
Uh-huh.
It had the phone on it. It had
the
call on it.
Yeah, gotta love that.
It had a little receipt thing that it printed out, and I tossed him like $10 for the phone
call. Why do restaurants need to hide little charges like that?
God.
And especially, it does seem like this New Jersey Italian restaurant is where, like, they're trying to dupe you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
they're trying to, you know, get one over on you.
One of our favorite restaurants that we went to and we took as a model for the Catherine Lombardi restaurant is in Staten Island.
Right.
And we like everything about the restaurant. I'm sorry, it's in Brooklyn. You're right. I'm sorry. But we like everything about the restaurant except that they try to slam you with the specials.
Yep.
They do slam you with the specials. And here's what I mean by slam you. First of all, in this day and age, it's perfectly appropriate when the waiter tells you the specials, he should either say the price of the specials or... alternatively, have the specials on a card somewhere.
Present you with something written so that you can, you shouldn't have to ask.
Because, look, sometimes the specials are more expensive than the average entree. And sometimes entrees range from, at stage left, entrees range from $22 to $45 an entree, depending on what it is.
Right. And if you're in a restaurant like that and somebody offers you a veal chop, you know it's going to be more expensive.
Right.
But is it going to be $50, which a veal chop could be easily, or is it going to be $28 with the veal chop could be easily. And I've said this before. I'm more likely to order the $50 veal chop because chances are it's fresh instead of frozen.
But don't slime me.
But don't
try and slip it past me. And actually, what this restaurant does, and they will remain nameless because I do like the restaurant, but I wish that restaurateurs would just stop this. And you, as a restaurant customer, don't be shy. It is not rude to say, how much is that? Or what is the price of that special? Mm-hmm. It's just not rude anymore to say that.
Frankly, it points out that the waiter has been rude and not telling you.
Exactly. And what happens often in this place is the pasta, you know, the pastas on the menu are all $18.
Mm-hmm.
And the pasta special, whenever we get the check, it's $29.
Right.
That's just wrong, okay? That's
right.
Slipping it in on you, and that's just, you know, it's not, I'm against it.
It's the same thing. A lot of restaurants, would you like shaved truffles on that? Now, I know that shaved truffles are going to cost a fortune, maybe as much as $100.
Right, but there are restaurants that don't say that.
But you can't offer me shaved truffles and not tell me what they're going to cost.
The other thing they do is we knew somebody who worked for a restaurant. They said, "Oh, which kind of vegetable would you like? Asparagus with that, or broccolini with that?" And Joe, broccolini, but it's extra.
Right, the broccolini is extra.
We'll be back talking more about Italian restaurants in just a moment. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55. You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, from Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and soon-to-be Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Talking about Italian restaurants, the state of Italian restaurants, and Italian-American restaurants in the Northeast. Now, we've been bashing some mistakes that some Italian restaurants make, but you know what? Everybody eats Italian food.
There's a reason these restaurants are so popular,
and,
okay? The food is great.
And the thing is, even the mediocre food is good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these Italian restaurants that you see around, I think part of the reason that we're so critical of them is because we love this food mm-hmm. so much.
Well, you talk about comfort food, and I'll tell you right now, flat out, eating good to great pasta makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I literally feel better after a satisfying meal of macaroni.
Macaroni.
Gotta say macaronis.
Yeah.
Macaronis and gravy.
I feel the same way after a couple of Guinnesses.
Okay. A little long fusilli or maybe some manigotte, which is actually made from crepes. It's not made from a lot of people think manigotte is a pasta. It's not really. Generally, what we would do is we would make crepes and stuff the crepes, and that's why manigotte has a different texture than a lot of other pastas.
I remember when we were a kid, there was a restaurant in Orange. I think it's still there, but it's different owners now. It was called Libretti's,
mm-hmm.
and all of Orange would be at Libretti's on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was because Mr. Libretti's manigotte was amazing stuff.
It's unbelievable. You know what Grandma used to do once in a while?
What?
And some people were talking to me about this last night. She would actually stuff each penne individually.
Oh.
And you'd have this little stuffed penne.
And what would she stuff it with?
With, like, the same filling you'd fill with manigotte, the ricotta
uh-huh.
cheese mixture
uh-huh.
With parsley, and sometimes it would have prosciutto in it, and a little salt and pepper, some egg. Just very, very simple. But each little mouthful with it, where the ricotta would just kind of melt in your mouth from inside the penne,
uh-huh.
Spectacular.
Are we going to do that at Catherine Lombardi?
Yes, sir, we are.
This is all. I'm investing $1 million to have your childhood relived.
I will smile a lot, but I'm definitely going to be 20 pounds heavier.
Yeah, we better go on a little exercise regimen, you and me, for that one. Well, and I also have to say, the other thing for me about Italian food is comfort food for everybody, but that and the fresh-made mozzarella, which we're going to make fresh-made mozzarella in the restaurant. But
yeah. If anybody's looking to barter a gym membership for some pasta.
And, hey, listen, I know if you don't live in Jersey, you know, you just have to find it on your own, but fresh-made mozzarella that's never been refrigerated,
oh,
and that's the key. The wet
so
mozzarella
good.
Made fresh that day or within a day or so, never refrigerated. If you live in Jersey, the best place to get it is Fiori's in Hoboken.
And have it with some fresh tomatoes.
Amazing.
A little fresh chopped basil.
Or wait to
never do better.
Or wait till we open up in October, Catherine Lombardi's in downtown New Brunswick. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.